Yes, the recording is going here at our office.
Okay, and Teams is recording. Time is 2:03. Teams are prepared to go forward, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, June 9, 2021. Before I begin, I will take a roll call in alphabetical order so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Mr. Berry. Mr.
President.
President, thank you. Mr. Chavez.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Mr. Einhorn.
Present.
Mr. Fridashi.
Present.
Mr. Hankin.
Present.
Mr. Shaw.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Here.
Mr. Winkler.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan. Thank you. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted telephonically due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It will be recorded in its entirety. For everyone participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time you are called upon to speak. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not to interrupt commission deliberations. If the commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the chairman. Further disruption may lead to that person's removal from the vote of the meeting. When the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. When you conduct the vote, first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's meeting of May 12, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the minutes of the regular meeting of May 12, 2021.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Okay. All in favor, I will take a roll call. Commissioner Berry?
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
Myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. The hearing officer's reports are publicly accessible on our website at www.ct.gov/FOI. Links on the agenda for today's meeting. I will call the docket. If you are a party and wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call on it and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First on the docket, this matter I think was tabled, is docket number FIC 2020-0251, Luis Colon Ortega versus Fernando Spagnola, Chief Police Department, City of Waterbury, et al.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Colleen, Colleen Murphy here, and that matter, you are correct, was moved off of the agenda due to the fact that Mr. Ortega is not available. He is incarcerated and in segregation today, so we could not get him on for today's meeting.
All right, so we table that?
Yes.
We need a motion to do that?
I don't think so. We moved it. We just marked it off of the agenda prior to the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0139, Jeff Schneider versus Chief Police Department, Town of Cromwell, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Chief Denise Lamontagne, Cromwell Police Department, and Lori Olette, Cromwell Police Department.
Wish to be heard, or would you like us to act on this matter? It was dismissed.
Correct. We don't need to be heard, just act.
Thank you. Is Jeff Schneider there?
Present.
Would like to be heard, Mr. Schneider?
I would.
We'll mark that ready. Thank you. Next is docket number 2019-0750, Kevin Rennie versus Deputy General Counsel, Office of Governor Ned Lamont. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Kevin Rennie, I'm here. I would like to be heard.
Thank you, Mr. Rennie. Is there anyone else here on that matter?
Good afternoon. This is Attorney General Philip Miller, and I represent the state, and I would like to be heard as well.
Thank you. Mark that ready. And last is docket number FIC 2019-0455, Sherry Spear versus State Marshal, City of New London, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes,
okay, one at a time. Is Sherry Spear there?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm here.
And you'd like to be heard?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. And then anybody from the State Marshal Commission?
Attorney Brian Eastep on behalf of Sheriff LaJoco.
Thank you. We'll mark that ready.
Thank you.
All right. Before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make some general announcements. Attorney Murphy?
Sure. As has been stated, this matter is being recorded in its entirety, so there's no need to request a recording of your particular matter. It will be available on our website very soon after this meeting, or you can request it from us. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you. I'm calling docket number FIC 2020-0139, Jeff Schneider versus Chief Police.
Mr. Chairman, you were cut off. Trying to see if we lost the connection to the chairman.
This is Matt Reed, Colleen. I don't know what number he was calling from. Perhaps we just wait a moment. He'll be able to call back in.
Okay, let's hold for a moment.
Here he comes now, I believe.
Attorney Reed?
Mr. Chairman, is that you? Okay, I think we've got you back.
Attorney Reed?
Yes, I'm here. Are you there?
Yes. Was everyone cut off, or was I cut off?
I think you were cut off. You dropped. Your line dropped.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
So I'm going to recall the matter. It's docket number FIC 2020-0139, Jeff Schneider versus Chief Police Department, Town of Cromwell, et al. Is Jeff Schneider there, please?
I am present.
And then for the Town of Cromwell, please.
Chief Denise LaMontagne, Lori Ouellette.
Attorney Ouellette?
No, she's not an attorney. She's our records clerk.
Okay. So, Attorney Chief LaMonte and
Lori Ouellette, records clerk.
Thank you. All right. Would you like to begin, Chief?
I have really nothing to add to the matter in regards to Mr. Schneider's complaints or the findings.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schneider?
Yes, I would like to, I guess, start by asking a question in regards to the summary that was sent in regards to number 19, where it is concluded that the respondents did not violate the FOI Act as alleged in the complaint. The complaint was for them to produce any and all audio or video electronic information, of which there was none provided, not even down to a 911 call to them. During this process that occurred with the Cromwell Police Department, I feel that I started out being bullied. Because of that, on 3/10,
hello? Hello? Can anyone hear me?
Yes, you hear. I can hear you, yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Can you hear the...
I can hear you.
Can you hear Mr. Schneider?
No.
No.
Perhaps
Attorney Reed?
We can wait a moment for him to return. We think we lost him for a moment.
Is this new equipment?
Everything is the same here. We're just, it's the lines coming in, whether people are having trouble with their connections. Not sure. Everything else seems to be operating normally.
Mr. Chairman, we're here in the commission's offices, and we are going to attempt to dial the number that we have for Mr. Schneider. If you can hold for just another moment or two.
Okay.
We'll see if we can get him.
Sure. Maybe because he sees the state of Connecticut.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello, Mr. Schneider. This is Cindy Fanatico.
Mr. Schneider, are you back, Mr. Schneider?
We lost you. Please try placing or call again so you can be a part of the meeting. Thank you. Bye.
There's someone coming in now.
Maybe this is accident.
Is Mr. Schneider on the line? Mr. Schneider?
I am back.
Hi. You cut off, Mr. Chairman. We have Mr. Schneider. Is he here?
Okay, Mr.
I am here.
Hi, Mr. Snyder. I'm sorry about that. You were about to begin your argument. Could you start again, please?
Oh, wow. I went a long time, didn't I? And I didn't realize that I was disconnected.
All right.
So we're going to start over. I guess I'd like to thank you for taking the time to hear us today regarding my request to the Cromwell Police Department to provide and produce any and all audio and video information regarding my incident. We had a trial, and during the trial, I do have in front of me, and I'm going to change your gears a little bit of what I was saying before, but I ultimately would like to address the conclusion of the commission where it said that the respondents did not violate the FOI Act as alleged in the complaint. And I would guess I'm looking for the answer in regards to statute 54-142A and 142E and G specifically.
So, sir, you're here to persuade us as to why the decision is not appropriate. So, we're not okay. Hearing the answer.
I didn't know if I could get clarification on that matter. All right, so on 310, I'd like to go through, I believe, the process of which has happened using factual information. on 310, I made a request to the Cromwell Police Department, L'Oreal Lett, for information, any and all information, audio and video, electronic information. At that point, she called me back and said, yes, indeed, they do have the information. I then received a message stating that the case had been nollied, 13 months had expired, and because of that, I am not allowed to have it. That's not the law, and they had no right to deny me on that initial request. On 316, I made a second request. During this time, I went down to court because the Cromwell Police Department told me that I didn't have a right to have it and that I needed to go file motions in order to get it, which I filed three. On 316, the court actually told me, no, the Cromwell Police Department knows better and they should have this information to be able to provide it to you. I then in turn called the Cromwell Police Department on 316. Lori was not in, but told them, stated, I cited the statute of 54-142A, what they were citing as applicable, and I cited E and G as being applicable. On 317, I received a response from Lori stating that it had been reopened as of 317, not 310, changing the dates. May not seem significant, but it is to me because I have 2 years to file this. My end date is 321. I feel like there was manipulation on their part. One, the bullying of sending me to different locations, not accepting my initial request, changing dates through the process. And then in turn, we get into a trial where I am requesting any policies, procedures, any audio, video, electronic information of which none was provided. There wasn't any kind of proof that was given as far as when any of this information was deleted. There was not any due diligence that was done as far as emails, proof of deletion, or anything that directly relates to them as far as how to produce the information. To the best of her knowledge is what the police used over and over again in our hearing without any fact. To the best of her knowledge, but yet could produce nothing to say what kind of due diligence did she go to her third parties to obtain the information and all the miscellaneous various types of data that are out there. Even down to something as basic as a 911 call to them could not be retrieved. I want to keep in mind, I would like for the commission to keep in mind, that while this case was going on, her response was that all data is deleted within 30 days on a loop. Well, that's not the truth, because there is a responsibility of a municipality to retain the information and even protect and safeguard, especially in an instance where it would be to the benefit of a police department to get rid of this as far as material, because they could have reason to believe that this evidence was exculpatory before they destroyed it to their benefit. So during the hearing, there are a couple different items here that are listed. However, it never addresses any of the effort that was put into by the police department in order to try to retrieve any of this information. other than simply stating to the best of my knowledge. If there was litigation, and there was, that was ongoing with multiple cases against myself, that it is just standard that this information is not going to be deleted. And that's part of the statutes that I had mentioned if you need to review them. Because of this, the finding of the commission of saying that they didn't violate it, well, they have obligations by law. They have to do due diligence in order to prove that it wasn't there. They hadn't produced anything. They have produced nothing factual other than a word to say to the best of my knowledge. The information that I requested wasn't given, even as far as policies and procedures of electronic data and the disposition of it after, in a situation exactly like mine, not just as a general rule and a general guideline. I filed within my statute of limitations of 2 years. I waited for 13 months after the NALI in order to retrieve the information. And now the information's gone. So I'm asking the commission that based on the information, lack of due diligence, lack of producing no information, lack of producing nothing factual, not even being able to get a 911 call. Think about this yourself. If you and your family ever had a situation and you called the police and you wanted to retrieve your 911 call and they tell you it's lost, how would you feel? This is basic information that should be provided by the police department. So I guess what I'm really looking for at the end of the day is for you to reconsider the entire case, what has happened, the process of events, the deception in which the police department has had, the miraculous disappearance of evidence, if it did. Can I have proof to show that this evidence was actually destroyed? It's a very basic request that I feel should have been able to be given to me. If you can't produce the evidence, prove to me that it wasn't there, not just some basic generic policy that says it's on a 30-day loop. Because every piece of audit of information is going to be treated in its own matter with its own policy. It's not a blanket answer for everybody. So my request to the commission is that you overturn the decision and order the Cromwell Police Department to surrender the electronic information or proof that the information was actually deleted.
Thank you. Attorney Harmon? Attorney Harmon there?
Yes, I can hear you. So,
comment on that.
Yeah, so I understand Mr. Schneider's position. The underlying incident in this case, you'll see, occurred on March 20th, 2018. And his first request for records concerning the incident was on March 10th, 2020. So almost 2 years later. He was initially told by the Cromwell Police Department that the records had been erased and that he couldn't have them due to the erasure. And then he made it more inquiries.
Can I qualify that, please? That wasn't actually the reason. They said it was because of the NALI I couldn't have it, not
right.
Because of an erasure.
Well, the NALI pro sec had answered, as I state in paragraph 3. So they couldn't be released to him because the NALI had entered and more than 13 months had elapsed. And basically that means the records are erased. So on further investigation, you know, the chief testified that she looked into this. She gathered all the records that she could find, and I list them in paragraph 11. I understand they're not audio or video records, but the chief testified correctly that those records, and I think that I detail all of this in paragraph 14 through 18, those records don't exist any longer. Now, you know, I understand that, you know, Mr. Schneider would like the records, but as far as what existed when he made his request, he received everything that's detailed in paragraph 11. With regard to the erasure statute and the provision in it, in 54142A sub E section 1, where it says that the record shall not be disclosed to anyone except the subject of the record, which I think Mr. Schneider is invoking. If the records existed within the police department and Anali Prosecki had entered and 13 months had elapsed, this wouldn't be an FOI issue because then we would be dealing with records that only Mr. Schneider could have. So that would be outside of FOI. That would be a right that he would have to get those records. But it's not relevant here because Cromwell Police testified that those records simply do not exist. You know, we examined every kind of record, booking videos. We went through all the types of electronic records. We talked about whether communications were recorded. And they gave him what was listed in paragraph 11, and there's nothing else that they have. And if they did have those records, I think it would be outside of FOI because the records would be erased, and it would be a private right of Mr. Schneider to obtain them, but that's not relevant in this case.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions? It sounds like you'd like to say something, sir.
Yeah, I understand that she has just made a comment that it may not be relevant, but I don't understand exactly how it can't be relevant if it's specifically stating that I am able, being the subject of that record, to get it. And then I would also like to respond to her comments about some of the sections in which she's explaining some of the records, like 11 as an example. It really doesn't get into audio and video into depth. It talks about paper, case incident reports, and the answer that the police chief continued to say was to the best of her knowledge, but she can never produce any type of documentation saying that she went to the third party provider that stores the information to show a date in which all these different recordings were even deleted. And I'm going to bring up something as simple as the 911 call. Why can that not be produced? You're saying it was deleted, but then under the municipality's obligation to preserve the audio and video information, there's another violation because I'm still within my 2-year rights.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions? So I'll just make a statement. I agree with the hearing officer, and I think the hearing officer, who is the person taking the evidence, is most equipped to understand what is true, what is not true, and I think that the decision was well written, and I think it is accurate.
Can you explain to me, though, how Section E does not apply to me being the subject of the record?
Is there anyone else who would like to comment or state anything? So, sir, we're done with comments at this time. I just was making my statement. So I'd entertain a motion at this time.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'm going to take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Barry?
Aye.
Commissioner Chavez?
Aye.
Commissioner Einhorn? Mr. Einhorn? Mr. Einhorn? I don't want him. Commissioner Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Shaw? I lost him as well. Mr. Streeter?
I didn't lose him.
Okay, yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And I'll call Commissioner Einhorn again. John Einhorn? And I Owen Egan, vote yes as well. Motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay, we'll move on to the next matter. Next matter is docket number FIC 2019-0750, Kevin Rennie versus Deputy General Counsel, Office of Governor Ned Lamont. Benny, are you there?
I am.
And Attorney Miller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Attorney Miller, would you like to begin?
Certainly. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Mr. Commissioner, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This is Fisher Berry. Yes. I'm just gonna step out of the discussion here and the vote, if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
You're recusing yourself?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Berry,
thank you very much.
This time. Thank you.
Yep.
I think Attorney Miller, would you like to begin, please, on behalf of the Office of Governor Ned Lamont?
Yes, Commissioner, thank you. So I think I'll focus most of my comments on the brief that I submitted on this case, and I'll focus most of my comments on the portion of the decision dealing with the commercial and financial information given in confidence. So the issue in this case, we have a number of documents that contained the names of companies that were negotiated or involved in potential economic development deals in the state of Connecticut. And the state took the position that this releasing the names of those companies themselves were exempt because they were commercial financial information, given in confidence and not required by statute. I think really the only issue here is whether or not they were given in confidence. The hearing also improperly concluded that the names of companies can be commercial financial commercial information. So I think the given in confidence prong, I think we need to look at the crazy case that this commission decided, a decade ago. And it's a very similar issue, and the findings there I think reflect the conclusions there and here. So in that case, what happened was Governor Moy at the time had announced an economic development initiative called the Search 5 program. And after he announced it, in the details of it, he was at a Chamber of Commerce lunch in their breakfast. And he made the comment, hey, two companies already contacted me. So a newspaper then requested the names of those companies. And we declined to release them claiming the exemption of commercial financial information. And this case went to a hearing. And at the hearing, Justice McDonald, then the general counsel, testified. And if you look at finding 17 in that decision, it sort of laid out our position. That respondents claimed that the names were given in confidence because in this context, confidentiality was implied by customary practice in economic development negotiations. Based on Attorney McDonald's testimony, the hearing officer found in number paragraph 20, it is found, based on the evidence presented at the hearing in this matter, that it's the custom to maintain the secrecy of economic development needs until an agreement is reached. And given that custom that the hearing officer then concluded this commission adopted, it is found that it was reasonable to infer assurance of confidentiality in the names of employers that made preliminary inquiries to the state for respondents about possible participation in the Search 5 initiative. And I think that is exactly what we have in this case. Now, in this case, we had testimony from Attorney Doug DeLina, Deputy General Counsel of the Governor's Office. And he testified to this same tradition in the tradition and custom in the industry that we keep the names of potential partners that are being negotiated. And he testified there's really two reasons. It protects both the state and the company. So, for example, a company would like its information to remain confidential, the fact that it's involved in negotiations with the state, because, who knows what could happen to that deal. Another company, maybe a competitor, swoops in, tries to undercut them because maybe they have more bargaining power or a bigger company, and that company loses the deal. The state has the same concern because, let's say we're getting a company to relocate to Connecticut, and a neighboring state hears about that, and then they swoop in with a better offer. So both the state and the company, or a potential partner, could be harmed by the release that this, their name or anything about this deal. And that's the same concern here as we had in Craven. And now, with all due respect to the hearing officer, in this decision, in paragraph 38, what she concludes is she says, she distinguishes Craven and said, in paragraph 38, unlike in Craven, where the companies had applied for certain economic benefits and therefore provided the means to the state in order to be considered for participation in the Biden initiative, but in this case, the state was pursuing the company. And with all due respect, I don't think that's a proper distinction. First of all, clearly in Craven, we were pursuing the company as well. You know, we were the ones, the state announced the First Five Initiative. The state created the program to bring business to Connecticut or expand business in Connecticut. Now, while it's true that in that case, at least those companies reached out to us once they heard about the initiative, to be honest, in this case, Commissioners, we didn't take any evidence on who reached out on these economic development deals because, frankly, I just didn't see where that is an important prong. Because as both in Craven, the testimony was, it's traditionally economic development deals on both sides to keep the names and other information confidential, and I don't see how the fact that which party would contact which party first would bear in that at all. So given the findings you've had in Craven and the testimony presented here that I laid out in my brief, respectfully request that you would reverse the hearing officer on the conclusion about the commercial financial information.
Thank you. Kevin Rennie?
Yes, hello. In seeking redacted or withheld documents, the citizen making the request is always at a distinct disadvantage. I haven't seen what's under the redactions or the missing documents, of course, so I have spent hours in hearings listening to vague descriptions of them, considered what they may contain in writing a brief, and this afternoon we'll talk to you for just a few minutes about them. I understand that drafts have long been a point of contention under the Act. In weighing the public's right to know against the yearning for secrecy by some powerful public officials is a highly subjective task. We have to rely on the decisions Attorney Delana made in consultation with Mrs. Lamont as reviewed by Attorney Ross in what to withhold, and that they meet the broad standard of the law that applies. I have no information that allows me to contest Attorney Ross's conclusion on that. But on the other matters, I do know a little bit more. And on the issue of economic development, I think what Attorney Miller has left out is that most of the emails that have many of these redactions that are said to have company names in them, they were not initiated, they were not to or they were not from government officials. There's clearly not a committee or someone deputized officially by the governor to engage in economic development activity. They cannot make offers or receive offers in any meaningful way for economic deals with the state. One of the several of these emails that have redactions are from a Yale management professor referring mostly to the negative impact of a soda tax on nutrition for children, followed by redactions, sometimes of paragraphs, but often just from sentence fragments. These are not negotiations. These appear to be musings or speculations, and these are not government officials that generated these emails. Now, these emails eventually ended up with Mrs. Lamont, who was not a government official, and members of the governor's, two top members of the governor's staff. But they were not in negotiations. These are separate parties offering their opinions. And those are not protected by some exemption in the Freedom of Information Act. And by a lot, if you were to allow that broad exemption to exist, you would be chipping away at the Act. It is nothing, these facts are not at all similar to the Craven case that was cited both by Attorney Ross and by Attorney Miller. And it does not apply. And I know for years and years that
public officials have tried to wedge, squeeze, or shove documents that they do not want the public to see into the growing list of exemptions on the Freedom of Information Act that are under our law. This is not one of them, no matter how much hocus pocus is sprinkled or performed on these redactions in those documents. Attorney Ross is right. This year is the 46th anniversary of the adoption of the Freedom of Information Act during Governor Ella Grasso's first year in office. When she signed the act in 1975, Governor Grasso knew she was opening government to the public it served in new and extensive ways. But she probably did not expect that our law would become a model for emerging democracies around the world. But it has, in an enduring tribute to Connecticut's leaders who have protected that act over the decades. But still, the struggle continues here at home. It never ends. Today, you are again called upon to remind our state's highest elected officials that the public's right to know is more than a sentiment in a Norman Rockwell painting. It is the law, and I ask you to uphold it and adopt Attorney Ross's recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions or comments? I have a question. Ross?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'm here. Can you hear me? Can you hear Attorney Ross? Mr. Chairman, she's here in the office with me.
Yes, I think I can hear.
Okay, great.
So in response to Attorney Miller's argument regarding the Craven case, he indicated that your decision distinguishes his case from that case. And I think it rests on the fact that the state was pursuing the companies. Is that correct?
Yes, I think, Mr. Chairman, it really, my proposed decision in this regard was based on the language of the statute. I mean, the language clearly says given in confidence. So in the Craven case, there was an economic development initiative that had been set up and created by the state. And there were companies who provided their names to the state to apply for those economic incentives. The facts in this case, we don't have the same evidence in this case. There was no evidence that there was a particular economic development initiative that had been established, and that companies had provided their names or put their names in the hat to apply for those incentives. So the facts are not the same. I mean, if those are the facts of this particular case, they did not come out at the hearing. And I think that, you know, obviously we know that the language that's used in a statute is used for a reason. And the plain language of that statute is given in confidence. And we just don't have the evidence in this case that their names were given to the state. And I do agree with Ms. Attorney Rennie's comments, and perhaps I should have made that more clear in the report, that the nature of these records, perhaps you could get a sense, I guess you don't have a sense of what the records are. I try to be very careful when we're dealing with in-camera records, but these were not records of discussions of negotiating with companies. They were very different. They don't reflect that a private company had given their name to the state to be considered for an economic development initiative. So I think that, again, the evidence in the two cases was just not the same.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chabay.
Yes.
Wanted to just indicate that I did review the Craven decision from 2012, and there are no, are a number of references in that decision to those employers contacting the governor concerning potential participation in that initiative, as well as to the customs of maintaining secrecy of economic development leads until an agreement is reached. So it was quite explicit in the Craven decision that there were factors that underlay the decision that are not present here as turned around back.
Any of the other commissioners wish to be heard? I feel differently. I feel that the argument that Attorney Miller made is accurate. It was for the development of our economic. Was pursuing these individuals versus those companies doing this. Confidentiality was implied, and privacy needs to be implied when we're dealing with economic development issues.
Yeah.
I think the argument was persuasive when he said that the negotiation. This information affect both sides, both the parties that are seeking to do business with the state and those that are, and then the state seeking to do business with those parties. I think it invites competition of other states, and it invites other may not have knowledge that their competitor is working with the state of Connecticut.
Mr. Chairman, it's Colleen Murphy here. I might suggest to you that you might want to review the records prior to making a determination like that they would probably be the best evidence of what is asked to be confidential here, and just, you know, to make sure in your own mind that it is as presented. I have not seen them either. I'm not trying to cast aspersions either way, but that it might be helpful to you to review the records. The hearing officer is here and indicating that she'd recommend that to you.
All right. So the recommendation is to table this?
This is Commissioner Streeter. I did not hear the Attorney Ross suggest that. I was just going to suggest that, I support Commissioner Savay and Commissioner Ross and their decision that, you know, if it wasn't brought up at the hearing, it's not something we can discuss at this point. And I think that I think that Attorney Ross got it right here. And I think that I was ready to move that we adopt this. So I would disagree with the chairman that I think it's, you know, something that I think unless the majority of the commission that deems that necessary, I think that there's enough evidence and support for the hearing officer to move forward with this.
Well, I mean, that's certainly an option. I think that the executive director was suggesting that the matter be continued so that the records could be thoroughly reviewed. I'd like that opportunity. I don't know if others would like that opportunity.
This is Commissioner Chavez. I would have no objection, Mr. Chairman, if you, especially in these pandemic times, if you wish to have the opportunity to do that, if we were all together, it would be simpler. But I certainly would have no objection. This is an important issue, and I would have no objection to your further consideration.
This is Commissioner Winkler. I would agree. I have no problem tabling this and reviewing the records.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I'm going
to agree. Anyone else?
Presenting, I think this is an important issue, and I would agree. with, important
don't understand the underlying facts, because Attorney Miller, I believe, was part of the case at the Craven case, and I think we have some sort of, it's an important issue to determine how to protect the state's business development powers while at the same time properly balance the Freedom of Information Act. So I think it's an important issue, and I would certainly agree to defer to further understand the underlying facts for those who want to and can look at those facts. I would be open to hearing more about the facts now if there's more discussion, either by Attorney Miller or the hearing officer. In either case, unless that discussion clarifies it, I would just support your desire to look at the ability to look at the record.
Thank you, Commissioner Fuzashi. Would you like to hear more from Attorney Miller and Attorney Ross?
I'm certainly going to hear a little bit more from Attorney Miller, because he was present in both cases. But I also read the original case, and it looks to me like he was.
As long as we allow Attorney Rennie to have equal.
Of course, Attorney Rennie.
Rennie as well.
Of course.
Are you suggesting that we do that now, and then continue this, or do it after we continue this?
I would just leave that open if anybody would like to make further comments based on your comments.
Right.
I'm not Attorney Miller, anybody. To the extent we can have a full discussion, a wholesome discussion now, I think that's useful, but I would like to defer to your request following that if the discussion is not, you know, lightly sufficient.
All right. Plenty of the other commissioners have anything to say.
As long as no new topics are brought up, I mean, this is, we're not allowed to have things that were not discussed at the hearing.
Correct. So, on that basis, I'll ask Attorney Miller, do you wish to make any comments based on what has been said?
Yes, if I may, please. And I think this, I'd just like to say something, I think, to give you at least, I don't know if the context right word, but as when you're reviewing the documents, just a question to be thinking about that I think, you know, should be thought about when looking at these. So, as Attorney Ross points out, and Mr. Rennie pointed out, or Attorney Rennie pointed out, you're correct. Many of these emails are not negotiations between the state and the company. You know, they are comments by members of Governor Lamont's economic development team that mention or discuss certain pending deals. You know, it might. The name, oh, by the way, you remember that, you know, talking about pending deals. And Attorney Delina testified to that, that the companies that were named who redacted were involved in economic development discussions. So that testimony was clearly made there. So the fact that those discussions were having among the governor's economic development team, which did include private industry, there's no doubt about it. You know, that were brought in to help facilitate these deals. Again, the question is, we're trying to redact the name of the company involved in these deals. And so I really think the really big question is, whenever that name came up, and again, we didn't put evidence on this, but I didn't see this as a critical thing. Well, who did the company first contact us and in their first communication say, we assume this is going to be private? No, what we based on this tradition, this longstanding tradition and custom in industry, that through entry and having economic development discussions, both parties, the state and the private company, all understand these conversations are confidential. The mere fact that negotiations are ongoing are confidential. The fact that now we are mentioning these companies in other communications, again, I don't think in any way changes the fact that that's a commercial financial information, the name of the company, and it was originally given in confidence by that company to us, regardless of who initiated the conversation. So I don't think the exemption changes at all simply because of the context of the emails, that they're between government officials, maybe about a different topic, as opposed to between the company and the state. So I guess when you're looking at those documents, I would be thinking about, well, that the ultimate question is, should this name be still released to the public? Is it still Confidential Information Assurance, the name of a company. Was it given in confidence? Well, it was because of the tradition in the industry when this first occurred. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I just wanted to make that statement. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Attorney Miller? So, Chairman Rennie?
Yes, thank you.
I give you an opportunity.
These are not government officials. These are people who may know government officials, who may be curious, who may be asked about, may be interested in what's going on. These are not government officials who are in these emails, who were with the redactions. They may know things, and the governor's office may have taken the risk of confiding in other people about what companies they might be interested in attracting to Connecticut. But these are not government officials who fall under the rubric and protection of Connecticut's, for instance, ethics laws. These are private citizens who are commenting on, we're not quite sure, but we hear some economic development issues, but private citizens do that all the time. Putting the name of a company in an email does not then make that document exempt from the Freedom of Information Act. And I know that the Attorney General's office has been very involved in these issues, almost always trying to narrow the scope of the Freedom of Information Act and lock the public out of the government's business. These are not documents that are anything close to the standards set forth under the Craven case and under Governor Malloy's first five program. These appear to be speculation and reactions and maybe a piece of advice here and there, but these are not from government officials. These are from private citizens.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chabe. Unfortunately, I need to sign off of the meeting now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chabe. So with that, I would entertain a motion to table this. Unless the commissioners have any other questions of Mr. Attorney Miller or Kevin Rennie. Anyone have any other question?
Mr. Chairman, would this be tabled for the next meeting?
I defer to Attorney Murphy.
Yes, I think we can do that. Simply put it on the next June meeting. There, you know, not delay it too long. And if any commissioner, if you were to table it, if any commissioner wished to review the records, we would make arrangements with you individually to do that between now and the next meeting.
This is Commissioner Winkler. I move that we table this issue until the next.
Commissioner Hankins, I'll second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of tabling. Commissioner Chave, she's gone. Commissioner Berry's gone. Commissioner Einhorn? Commissioner Einhorn? Bill Watson. Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Streeter?
I'm not voting in favor of taking it.
Commissioner Winkler?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. So the matter will be tabled until the next meeting. Attorney Murphy has offered to meet with us individually so that we can review the records and be prepared for the next meeting. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rennie. Thank you, Attorney Miller.
Thank you.
Great. Next, we have docket number FIC 2019-0455, Sherry Spear versus State Marshal, City of New London, et al. Is Sherry Spear there, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Okay, and I understand Attorney Brian Tess is there.
Yes, I'm on the line.
Okay, is there anyone else there with you, counsel?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Spear, do you wish to begin?
Yes, I just would like to bring the chairman's attention to the decision of Attorney Berman, paragraphs 9 and 10, that Attorney Berman concluded that state marshals are public officials of the state of Connecticut and they are subject to FOIA. And then I'd like to bring your attention to paragraph 16, where Marshal Ajoko said he maintained some of the records. When originally he said he didn't have the records. So if some of the records are kept and not all the records are kept, is that a violation of FOIA? That's all I have to say about this. Thank you.
Yes, I believe that the complainant is misreading paragraph 16. Attorney Harmon's decision said that he maintained records during the process of the tax sales, but then after it was completed, turned all the records over to the city. So he did not maintain, them after the sales were completed. He turned everything over to the city. And to that extent, on behalf of Sheriff Ajoko, we have no objection to the proposed final decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter? I just think that, you know, perhaps the complainant, you know, it looks like that the records were turned back over to the city of New London. So I would recommend, I'll say that maybe she should be making a request there for those records, if they're the ones that are maintaining the records.
Okay, I just, I'm sorry, I my question was he supposed to give me the records, but since he's the a public official, officially, but I could do that. Thank you.
Motion.
Mr. Chairman, again, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Dr. Winkler, I second that.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote of those in favor. Barry?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez? Mr. President. Mr. Einhorn? Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Motion passes. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, before we get to that, we did add a little bit late to the agenda some decisions that just came down on June 8th, an appellate court decision that I'd ask Attorney Perlman to report on if she's on the line. And then we have another one under item 4, Marissa Lowther, that I'd ask Mary to report on, Attorney Schwind. So item number 3, Attorney Perlman, if you're there, can you just let us know what happened in that case? I know our decision was upheld and the trial court decision was upheld.
I believe I'm there. Hi, good afternoon. So this is actually a case that I heard with Commissioner Hankins a while back. It involved a solar developer that had requested some records from the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection regarding an RFP and clean energy contracts. The department had withheld numerous records claiming that they were trade secrets. On appeal, ultimately on appeal, the only document that with that issue was answer key, which the commission, which indeed argued and commission concluded was exempt as a trade secret. Essentially, this answer key was a compilation of huge amounts of data that had been submitted by bidders to the department, including proprietary and confidential information. Both the Superior Court and the appellate court found that the commission's conclusion was supported by substantial evidence in the record. The plaintiff's arguments primarily focused on whether DEEP was actually engaged in a trade and whether steps were taken to maintain confidentiality. He had a few other arguments, but I believe those are the primary arguments made. The court, again, agreed with the commission, agreed that DEEP was engaged in a trade as set out in the statute. The fact that it coordinated the RFP and used the answer key to analyze the proposals, that was part of the process for making the amendment in a highly competitive industry, and it was the benefit of the ratepayers. And the court also found that even though DEEP itself didn't have direct competitors, that it was a participant and had a direct interest in ensuring competitive rates for the ratepayers. And also that it was some economic value because DEEP had expended a lot of money to actually have this entity develop. And ultimately, the court also found that the commission properly concluded that there had been reasonable steps taken by all the parties involved to maintain the secrecy of the information. They found that it was proper for the commission to credit the testimony that was given by the interviewers and also the department hearing, and which included testimony regarding non-disclosure agreements and protective orders. And again, they upheld our decision, finding that we interpreted the law correctly and that there was substantial evidence. Yeah, that one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. I know that was a complex case for you and for Commissioner Hankin. So,
yeah.
Well, for you, I can't even.
We went through a lot of documents for this one, but ultimately it was a 4-page record that was at issue.
Okay, thank you.
And I don't know, obviously, DEEP is satisfied with the decision. I don't know if ALCO and Mr. Malone are going to seek cert from Supreme Court. We'll see.
Okay, thank you again. And moving on to the next item, another appellate court, a very short decision, if you will. I'll just let Attorney Schwind, who is here in the office in our new hearing room with me, give you a little briefing on that.
Thank you, Colleen. Hopefully you can hear me. These matters began at the commission in 2016 as 4 contested cases filed by Marissa Lother. The executive director issued notices.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I cannot hear Attorney Schwind. I'm
having a bit of a COVID as well.
She's going to move a little closer to our microphones. We're testing our microphones.
Can you hear me now? No?
Oh, did he hang up?
Uh-oh.
Yes, can try again.
Yes, hopefully you can hear me at this point.
No. Commissioner Streeter's indicating only so-so.
Should I come back?
Yes.
All right.
All right. She's going to relocate again. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hopefully you can hear me now. Just briefly, these were 4 contested cases. that Marissa Lothert filed with the commission in 2016. The executive director issued notices not to schedule, which the commission affirmed in all four matters. In 2017, the plaintiff appealed to the Superior Court. In 2019, the Superior Court affirmed the commission's decision not to schedule these matters. And then the plaintiff then went to the appellate court. And another 2 years later, here we are. And the appellate court affirmed the Superior Court's decision. And I'm just hoping that these matters can be put to rest now.
Thank you, Attorney Schwinn. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Well, although the decision was like a slip of opinion, it's certainly no reflection on the record in that case, which was arduous, which is a very kind way of describing the record that Mary had put together for the court below. So we're glad that it has reached this conclusion and hope, as she said, that it doesn't go further. Okay, so next would be pending appeals. I don't have any additional reports under pending appeals. We do have a few arguments that have occurred, including an additional one with Ms. Lothert, heard just the other day with Attorney Harmon, but we have a couple of others that we're awaiting decisions on. But beyond that, no new appeals. That's it. On the next item, which is the executive director's report, the status of our operations during the pandemic and beyond, we have begun doing hearings in our new space, and so far they have gone well. We've tested and utilized the equipment here, and it seems to be working well despite some minor technical difficulties today that I think are due to connectivity issues rather than anything having to do with the equipment here. So we're getting up and running. And in terms of our relocation, we have officially moved everything out of our old offices at 20 Trinity Street. And we're settling in here slowly but surely. And I want to give the kudos to all of our staff, but particularly to Ms. Cindy Cannata, who is also here in the room with me, who is our chief mover and organizer, and she deserves a standing ovation for that and more probably. And then also, to Matt Reed, who became our lead, on, whether he wanted to or not, on all things technical, electronic, and beyond. So I want to single them out, but the move occurred with little to no hiccups, thanks to their work. But also the cooperation of everybody. Everybody took care of their own stuff and got it out of there. We were complimented by the folks we've been working with at DAS on the way we left the building and the smooth nature of the move. And it's not surprising to me, but I think it was surprising to them. So we're done with that. We're trying to adjust here. It's a little different, as you will see when we get you back with us. Under general updates, we're awaiting the reappointments of Commissioners Streeter and Hankins. Still anticipating that those are going to come soon. And then under our staff reports, I'll just report that our staff attorney 2 position has been posted, and we're collecting applications for that position right now, and that's the position that was left vacant when Attorney Perpetua retired from the commission. And then next, I guess we can turn to our legislative report. I'll turn it back over to Attorney Perlman. We have been working pretty feverishly these past few days on a few bills in particular, and I don't think Paula intends to give a full rendition as the session will be ending tonight, but she, I think, wants to give you some general on a few of the bills that we've been tracking and working on.
Yes. I was going to keep it brief. It's been a little longer than I was planning. planning on doing it, but there are three bills that I wanted to highlight. One of them is, I wanted to highlight because it has passed both the House and the Senate. The other two are still ongoing. As Colleen said, there has been a lot of action in a very short period of time. And although today is the last day of the regular session, a special session is on the horizon, so our work isn't done. Just so quickly, one of the bills that has passed both the House and the Senate was the one that broadened the exemption that we currently have for concrete foundations. Initially, we didn't oppose the proposal due to the temporal nature of the exemption, and we worked with the stakeholders to narrow the language. Unfortunately, when the proposal was taken up by the House, an amendment was adopted that removed the temporal nature. So it makes this exemption permanent. On the House floor, legislators did express a concern regarding the disclosure of homeowner information, and we felt that, you know, the concern is understandable, but right now, arguably, the language is so broad that it could actually be used to withhold information from even the homeowners themselves. So we had reached out to legislators after the House had adopted it and before the Senate took it up, and, you know, asking them, you know, will they be willing to engage, you know, a discussion to clarify the extent of the exemption. But unfortunately, we didn't hear back, and ultimately the Senate passed the bill as is. So again, I don't know what will, you know, what agencies will do, whether they'll you know, try to claim this exemption if homeowners themselves are trying to get this information. So we'll see, but we try. And the other two bills that I just wanted to report on, these are two that have had a lot of action over the last week, I would say, week and a half. One of them is the one that deals with the restrictions on access to voter registration information. As I presented in the past, there were, you know, three areas of concern with respect to this bill. It was a proposal that would only allow the disclosure of the year of birth on voter information list, unless it was for a governmental purpose that would be defined by the Secretary of State, and also that anyone who would want their name completely removed from the voter registration list could simply sign a statement indicating that they were afraid for their safety. We had concerns with all three. We thought we offered a compromise that it should at least be the month and year, that governmental purpose should be defined, and that with respect to the safety concern, that the individual who is claiming or expressing that concern would be required to sign either an affidavit or a statement under penalty of false statement. We proposed that compromise, and it was actually accepted in part, so that now the disclosure is required of the month and year of birth, and that a signed statement under penalty of false statement is also required. So the House adopted this as an amendment to a different bill that we originally weren't monitoring because it didn't have an FOI concern in it. It is now on the Senate floor to be taken up. It's still sitting there. We have heard that it actually won't be taken up by the Senate now, but it will be taken up later and the budget implementers are in special session. So we continue to monitor this bill. It's been up and down. So that's where that one stands. And the other one is the remote meetings bills. As you know, there have been five this session. There have been many drafts, many meetings, a lot of correspondence, a lot of input from various parties. Recently, there was one proposal that raised so many concerns and questions that it would have made it almost practically impossible for the agencies to operate and for us to actually adjudicate any cases that came before us. Fortunately, that one was not taken up. A bill has been passed by the House that would allow agencies to hold electronic meetings. This bill is awaiting action in the Senate. We still have concerns, including, ironically, including provisions that deal with connectivity issues and the resumption of meetings if connections are lost. So as we could see just from today's meeting, that is a very real possibility that there are going to be connectivity issues. Interestingly enough, the current version of the proposal is in effect for only 1 year. We're not sure what's supposed to happen after the year is done. There is a requirement that it's called the Connecticut Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, that they conduct a study, and that study is due next February. So maybe they're waiting until that study is complete to decide whether or not to make these electronic meeting requirements permanent. But again, as I said, the proposal has passed the House, and it's sitting on the Senate calendar for action. There's a lot more to report, but just going to have to wait. So I'll be compiling a report and I'll give you more information at that point. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Okay, thank you, Paula, for that and for all the work on this. We will stay tuned. And I guess next, under new business, which I have none, unless anyone else does, I think we've concluded.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move that we adjourn.
I second that, Commissioner Winkler.
Thank you. I'm going to call a roll call. Is all those in favor of adjourning? Commissioner Berry?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn? Commissioner Fugeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
Commissioner Winkler?
Yes.
And Chairman O'Neagan, yes, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Colleen?